Welcome to the podcast for Christ Community Church in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. This is the message from Sunday, December 21st, 2014, given by Tom Job from Philippians chapter 4 and Matthew chapter 2.
You know, at Christmas time, there's a lot, usually like in stories about Christmas, most of them, there's usually like a Christmas villain, you know, like somebody's calling my mom. It's probably, but usually, who is it? But anyway, are they wanting to talk to me? But usually there's lots of Christmas. But in lots of Christmas stories, there's a villain. Like I was reading the, like, you know, How the Grinch Stole Christmas. I was reading the other day that, Dr. Seuss, it was in December the 26th, 1956, and he said he looked in his mirror while he was brushing his teeth, and the face of the Grinch just looked back at him, and he realized, I have really forgotten the meaning of Christmas. And so he sat down and wrote that story about the Grinch and about somebody who was like a real Christmas villain who was the king of sinful sots. Wow, that is terrible. The king of sinful sots. A triple-decker sauerkraut and toadstool sandwich with arsenic sauce. I mean, some of you guys that, like, probably everybody knows this, but that the TV show about the Grinch, the person who read it in those old black and white movies of Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein with Elsa Lancaster, but the guy who played Frankenstein, Boris Karloff, he's the one that read that story, and the one who sang that song about the Grinch actually was the guy who always did Tony the Tiger. You know, that they're great. It was that guy, but I always think about, like, probably the Christmas villain you think of in any story is Ebenezer Scrooge. And here's how Charles Dickens, when he wrote it, it was in 1843, last Thursday. And this is how he describes this Christmas villain. And Scrooge became as good a friend and as good a master and as good a man as the good old city knew, or any other good old city or town or borough in the good old world. And it was always said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas well, if any man alive possessed the knowledge. And may it truly be said of us and of all of us. And you're like, well, I thought Scrooge was like a villain. Like, I thought he was like super grumpy. But actually, that was at the beginning. In fact, at the beginning of the story, this is how he described him. He said he was a squeezing, retching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner. But it's not who you are at the beginning that matters. It's who you are at the end. I remember Dr. Seuss, he received a letter from, it was postmarked Ridgefield, New Jersey. And it said, please change the names in your book because people keep hassling us. And their names were Bob and Dave Grinch. And he wrote him back and said, really, the Grinch is the hero of the story because it's not who you are at the beginning, but who you are at the finish. You know, really pretty much every human being, when they start out their life, you know, every human being is like a unique personality with, you know, you think, you have the personality that God gave you, and you think in a unique way, and you feel in a unique way. But the New Testament says every person is born, you know, dead. Like, spiritually, it's not good. Like, every person is born dead spiritually and disconnected from God. and separated from God and just disconnected from the power of God. Like the way the New Testament describes people before they know Jesus, it says that you were dead in your transgressions and sins in which you formerly walked according to the course of this world, and you were children of wrath. There's one place, a couple of places later in Ephesians 4, where Paul, he says, remember that, you know, there was a time when you were walking in the futility of your mind, darkened in your understanding, alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance in your hardened heart, and you were given to sensuality and greed for more. And in another place, he said, at one time, you were foolish, disobedient slaves to passions and pleasures, passing our days in malice and envy, hating and hating each other. And in Greek, what it says is you were a nasty, wasty skunk, and your heart was full of unwashed socks. Your soul was full of gunk. The three words I would use to describe you, and I quote, are stink, stank, stunk. But when a person accepts Jesus, like when a person decides in their heart, I believe that because he died for me and because he rose from the dead, I believe that he is loving and good. And I believe the best thing, I believe trusting in him is the best thing that I could possibly do for myself. And when a person does that, several things happen. One is you're immediately forgiven of everything you've ever done, do, or will do in your life. But also in that moment, not only are you given a new start, but you're also given a new heart. And the New Testament says that Jesus, who's risen from the dead, comes to live inside of you. And he gently begins to take over your heart. When we say that Jesus is the Christ, what that means is the word Christ is actually a Greek word that in the Old Testament word was, it was a word that meant like, it meant to pour oil on somebody's head. Like, but that was kind of their way of saying, this person is going to be the king of this nation. Like Samuel did it to young David, the shepherd boy. He poured oil on his head as a way of saying, one day you're going to be the king of Israel. And the Hebrew word for pour oil on their head is the word mashak. And the one who has oil on his head is the Mashiach. It's where we get the word Messiah. And in the Greek language, to pour oil on their head in that way is the word krino. And the one with oil on his head is the Christos. When we say that Jesus is the Messiah, the Christ, what we're saying is he is going to be one day this king of this entire world. And it says in the New Testament that Jesus, one day, he is going to come, split the skies, and come out of heaven. And he is going to take over this world. And his capital is going to be the city of Jerusalem. And he is going to rule the entire world. And there won't be any more cruelty and hate and oppression and suffering. And the world will finally be a wonderful place when Jesus is king of all of it. And in the meantime, for those people who invite him into their life, he gently begins to take over your heart and become the king of it. And it's a long process, but I will be a wonderful person. I'll be the person that God always knew I could be when Jesus is finally the king of every bit of me. And usually, getting from person A to person B, like the person that I am when Jesus doesn't really rule my life, to person B, the person I'll be when he's the king of all of it, me A to me B, usually it is not an easy journey. And usually it involves problems and troubles and crises, because those are what provide me opportunities to say, even though I am having a hard time, I believe that Jesus is loving and good. And I believe that trusting him and obeying him is the best thing that I can possibly do for myself. I'm not afraid of him taking over my life. I welcome him as my king. Well, in Matthew chapter 2, we read the story of a Christmas villain. He never went from being person A to person B. He pretty much stayed in A the whole entire time. But and his name was King Herod. And the Roman government had determined that he was the king of the Jews. And then all of a sudden, Magi came from Persia, and they said, a baby has been born. Where is he who is the Christ, the Savior? And it said that King Herod was suddenly, he was like, what? No. He couldn't eat. He couldn't sleep. A baby has been born. And he was filled with Christmas anxiety. And you would think, wouldn't the king of the Jews be happy that the Messiah had been born? Well, it's kind of a complicated story because King Herod actually wasn't Jewish. He was born on the Arabian Peninsula. He was really an Arabic person. And his dad had been big buds with Julius Caesar. And Julius Caesar, when they finally kicked out all of the armies of the Empire of Persia out of the Holy Land, he made Herod Sr. the governor of Judea. And so he told Herod Jr., well, you can be the king of Galilee. He was about 20. And he was like, awesome, awesome. I'm like the king of something, you know, like 20 years old. And then Julius Caesar got knocked off, you know, by his friends. And that's when the Persian Empire said this would be an awesome chance to take the Holy Land back, which they did. And they drove all of the Romans out of it. And Herod had to escape to Egypt, where he borrowed a ship from Cleopatra and went to Italy, to Rome, where they had a mutual friend, Mark Antony. And then Mark Antony said to Herod, he said, look, you get to be the king of the Jews, but you have to go kick the Persians out. And so he said, okay. And so he took his armies, and that's what he did. It took him 3 years to get the Persian army out of the Holy Land, and 3 years to capture Jerusalem. And there were certain people on the city council of Jerusalem that really weren't happy with him being their king, so he knocked them off. And then he thought, you know, I need to make some friends around here. So he started building stuff. He was probably the greatest builder of ancient times. He built like circus stadiums and gladiator stadiums and like chariot racing stadiums and coliseums. And then he built also in Jerusalem, to really get people to like him, he built them a new temple, because the temple that they had, it wasn't the one that Solomon built, because that one had burned down. And so they built another one, and most people felt that it was kind of a dud. So he built them one that was like so awesome and twice as big as the original one. And it was like one of the wonders of the world. And he's like, is everybody happy with me? And they pretty much were. I mean, like, he had brought stability and prosperity. And he was like, awesome. I am going to build myself a palace, which he did, to put his 10 wives in. And then, so he got everything the way he wanted it. And then here come these Magi from Susa, the capital of Persia. I mean, that's what most scholars think. The Magi weren't kings or anything. They actually were political and religious advisors to the king of the Persian Empire. Actually, they were the ones who determined who would be the next king. And there weren't three of them. There was probably, because they had to go like 900 miles through this really treacherous desert and stuff, there was probably a small army of them, like 130 or something like that. And they had seen, because they had seen us, there's always been all kinds of debate about what they saw, what the star was. There was a German astronomer who in the 1500s, And there used to be a professor of astronomy at the University of Minnesota who was originally from Latvia. And he used to give lectures about what they probably saw was a conjunction of the planet Jupiter, which stood for the king of the world, and Saturn, which stood for the Messiah, and a star from the constellation Pisces, which stood for the Holy Land. And that happens like once every kabillion years, but apparently it happened in May of 7 BC, and it happened again in October of 7 BC, which in Ezra it takes about five months it took to make that trip that they made, and then it happened again in December of 7 BC, and it could have been that, but they came and said, you think about Persians, the ones who were responsible for determining who would be the next king. Where is the king? He has been born. And Herod was filled with anxiety. What if he takes over? What is it going to cost me? What am I going to lose? I finally have everything exactly the way I want it. And I have worked hard to get things in my life exactly the way I want them. And somebody's like, it's just a baby. Yeah, but you and I both know he's going to grow. And there were ancient prophecies that had been made 700 years before the first Christmas. In Micah, it says, from you, Bethlehem, Ephratah, like little Bethlehem. It's like saying not Cleveland, Ohio, but Cleveland, Tennessee, will be born the one who will be the ruler of our people. And he will shepherd his flock in the might of God. And Isaiah chapter 7 said, for a virgin will conceive and become pregnant and bear a son, and they will call his name Emmanuel, which means God with us. He's like, God, come down to earth. And a couple of chapters later, Isaiah said, one day all wars are going to be over, and all of the weapons and all of the uniforms and the boots that are soaked in blood are going to be burned in a great big fire, because unto us a child is born and unto us a son is given, and his name will be called the Wonderful Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, and the Prince of Peace. And of the increase of his government, there will be no end. And he will sit on the throne of David. And Herod's like, that's my seat. That's where I sit. And somebody's like, yeah, but I mean, he's a prince of peace. He's a prince of shalom. He's a prince of everything that's good for us. Oh, yeah, I know. He like loves us. And he loves us so much. He's going to want to change me. And he's going to want to make me grow. And he's going to want to rule everything. And he's going to want to own everything. And I have worked hard to get things the way I want them. And he's not going to mess with it. I'm not having it. And he was willing to do horrible things to his own family. And he tried to do them to Jesus and to his family, and did it to other people's family, because he wanted things to stay the way he wanted them to be. There's certain places in the Harry Potter books where sometimes there's a real Christmas villain in that one named Voldemort. And sometimes when Voldemort was angry, Harry could feel it inside of him. And sometimes I think when a person has a lot of anxiety, if they'll stop long enough, they can feel Herod's anger inside of them. People who love Jesus struggle with anxiety. I mean, a lot of us do. And sometimes it's because we forget that God is in control, or we don't really believe it very much, that he's in control and that he's working out an awesome plan. And that's kind of easy to fix because all you have to do is get sick of being anxious and kind of fortify your belief in those things. But sometimes we do believe that God is in control and that he's working out a plan, but we don't really trust it. We don't really trust his heart. We don't really trust his ways. We don't trust his methods. If I were to let him rule my life, what would I lose? I've got everything. My job, my friends, my relationships, my time, my money, my house. I've got everything the way I want it. And I have worked hard to get it like this. And now he's going to come and mess with it. Yeah, but he's our Savior. Yeah, he's our Savior, but you and I both know that he will grow. The angel said to Joseph, you'll call his name Jesus because he will save his people from their sins, not in them. And as Isaiah said, of the increase of his government, there will be no end. He won't know how to stop. And somebody says to me, yeah, but he loves us. Oh, yeah, I know he loves me. He loves me so much that he's going to want me to grow. And he's going to want to change me. And he's going to want, and I don't think he really cares what he has to put me through to make me grow. And he's going to want to rule everything. And he's going to want to own everything. Sometimes people debate whether or not anxiety, theologically or ethically, whether anxiety is a sin. And I don't really know if it's a discussion that's helpful, but one thing I do know is when there's a lot of it, there's almost always a lot of both. And I think that if you thought about it, the most bitter you've ever been, the meanest you've ever been, the most hurtful things you've ever said, behind all of that was a lot of anxiety. And I know that the anxious me is always the worst me. And so a star appeared, and one person was filled with anxiety. And yet there were other people, it said the Magi, when they saw the star, Matthew, he could not say it anymore. He said they rejoiced with a joy, and he uses the word mega. They rejoiced with like mega joy, and he adds another word that says that was explosive. They like exploded in joy. And you think, why was the coming of the king for one person just the reason for all of his anxiety, and for others, the reason for all of their joy? What makes the difference? And I was thinking about them, and one thing that I think one of the keys might be, like the Magi, you know, they were way over there in Susa, in the capital of Persia, and when they saw the star, they might have said, the Messiah's been born. You know, they could have opened a bottle of champagne. Awesome. The Messiah has been born. Splendid old bean. You know, that's like, well, I don't know why they did, and why didn't they just do that? Instead, they had to go 900 miles. And the reason is because they had to worship him. And the reason they had to worship him is that they had gifts that they had to give him. The best of what they had in their heart, the best of everything they owned, they had already given to him. And they weren't afraid of what they were going to lose, or they weren't afraid of what the king could possibly take from them, because they had already given in their heart everything to him. They had nothing to defend, nothing to protect, because they didn't have anything that in their heart was not already his. And I think for a person to be set free from anxiety, there is no more important thought than that. I have nothing to lose because I've already given everything to him. And they went on a 900-mile treacherous journey. And back in those days, there were lions, and there were robbers, and there were also bears. Oh, my. But they were like, we don't care. You're not getting this stuff because it's not ours. It's his. And if somebody said, well, what if you get discouraged along the way and you want to turn back? I don't care. My life is not mine. My life is his because he has won my heart and he can rule it and he can have it because I believe that he is loving and good, and I believe there is no trusting him and obeying him and giving my life to him is the best thing that I could possibly do for myself. When I thought about it, and this is probably stupid, but I thought about Herod's story. And I thought, what if Herod's story had ended differently? What if when the Magi came to Jerusalem and Herod hosted them in his palace, because if there were 130, he had the rooms for it, and they sat up at night around a fire and they explained to him why they had come and why they had given their heart to the baby Messiah. And they said to him, because we have gifts of myrrh. Sometimes back in those days, people knew stuff and you think, how did they know that? I don't know, but they did. And they said, we have gifts of myrrh. And he could have said, yeah, but myrrh is a gift that you give to the dead. And they could have said, don't ask us how we know. But we believe that he has come to give his life for us. And we have gifts of frankincense. Well, frankincense is a perfume that you burn in the temple and it rises into the heaven. And we believe that he will rise into the heavens and he's going to take us with him. And that's why we bring to him the gifts of gold, because he has won our heart. And he is our king. And I thought, what if Herod, instead of saying, go and find the child and come and tell me, what if Herod had said, could I go with you? Sure. And what if in a crowd of 120 people in the streets of Bethlehem, outside of the home of Joseph and Mary, as they all bowed down, what if his face had been bowed to the street? And what if they had told Joseph, you know King Herod is here to worship your child? And what if he had called him and Herod had shook his hand and he said, I want you to know that anything that you and your bride could ever need, just come and ask me. And I don't know how much time I have left, but when I'm gone and when the boy is grown, will you tell him that I loved him and that I gave my heart to him? And he became as good a man and as good a king and as good as a friend as that good old city ever knew, or any good old city. And if anyone knew how to keep Christmas well, it was him, if anyone alive has that knowledge. That's not the way it ended, but it could have. And it's Christmas. And things happen at Christmas. And if you have something in your life right now, whether it's a relationship or it's a decision that you made, and or it's a protection that you have over yourself and your plans and your time or your whatever, or your life. And you're afraid to let him have it. This is a time when the story could change. And you could write a different story. And it would be a different story about how Jesus conquered your heart and you let him have everything that he ever wanted from your life, so that when it was over, they said, and there was never as good a man, as good a woman, as good a friend as this good old city ever knew. Lord God, I do pray for those of us who hold back on you because we're afraid of you. We're afraid of our King. We're afraid of your heart. We're afraid of your ways. And it's writing a story that we don't want to live anymore. And I ask you that maybe today could be the day that's the first day of the beginning of a new story, when we say to you, you can have it. You can take it. You can rule it. You can own it. My heart, my time, my future, my plans. I don't want them anymore. I want them to belong to you. In your precious name, King Jesus, you have conquered my heart.
To find out more about Christ Community Church in Oak Ridge, visit our website at c3oakridge.org. Again, that's c3oakridge.org.